Standing in the shadows of love, I'm getting ready for the heartaches to come. Can't you see me standing in the shadows of love? I'm getting ready for the heartaches to come. But there's nowhere to go. So welcome to Shadow Politics. We're standing in the shadows, but we can still see the light. That was Levi Stubbs and the Four Tops, just standing in the shadow of love. Thanks for coming tonight to Shadow Politics, a grassroots talk show, which is on a new mission to make America think again. We hope our show will shine a light on the issues that are changing our lives and changing America's course for the future. I'm your host, recently retired United States Senator Michael D. Brown. I've been in the shadows for the past 18 years, but now I'm stepping into the light. Together with my brilliant co-host, Liberty Jones, we want to start a dialogue with America about the truth, because it's what happens in the shadows that changes the world. We're not going to tell you how to feel or who to vote for. We're just going to bring forth the experts who have been there and can tell us and can give us the information to educate our decisions, because a vote is a terrible thing to waste. And tonight, we have a great guest, Dr. Frances Rahame, the money doctor. She has an incredible podcast called Hug Your Money, and we're going to tell you how to get on it. And we're also going to have the doc tell us how you can take advantage of some of the services she offers, because she's out there to help you with your money. And we all need help right now. I'm sorry, we all need help right now with our money. Liberty, welcome. Dr. Rahame, welcome. Let's start the show. So, Doc, let me ask you something. I feel like I'm safe. I've got money invested. I'm an old, rich, white guy. So I don't think I have anything to fear from Donald Trump. Am I right? Is the stock market going to rebound? You know, I mean, it's all over the place. But my feeling is that in the long run, it's going to do just fine. You think I'm right?
Well, I think what's important there, Senator, obviously, is that you have the wherewithal to weather a storm, whether you're right or you're not.
Yeah.
And what happens for people who don't have that is that they really suffer from these ups and downs. And you could ask a million economists and you'll get a million opinions about whether you're right or not, what will happen to the economy. You know, I will say on the podcast, which you've been on, Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, right?
Yeah.
We call it that because that's what we care about, is people's financial wellness. So, you know, I think in these times, we're really looking at what I would call a tale of two economies, right? What we're really looking at is one thing on paper and one thing that seems real to people. And I don't really recall in my adult lifetime feeling quite like this. I mean, there's always a sort of lag, right? You know, one president comes in, one president goes out. Somebody's claiming that they've done whatever is happening right at the moment, or that the last person is to blame. Excuse me. And really, in reality, there's this lag, what happens in the markets, right? But when I say we're looking at a tale of two economies, what I mean is, there are some macroeconomic indicators that show that things are improving on paper, right? Excuse me, I'm sorry. Things like lower unemployment. Low unemployment, we're at 4.2%. I'm so sorry. I don't even have a cough button. We're at 4.2% unemployment. That looks great on paper, but it doesn't, you know, an economist would say that's almost full, you know, unemployment, right? It's great numbers.
Full employment, yeah.
Full employment, excuse me. But it doesn't take into account things like underemployment or job quality or wage stagnation. So it's an issue.
Well, this is the perfect, that's a perfect segue, Doc. Give you a break for a second to bring in Liberty Jones, because these are all the kinds of things that are going to affect her, I believe. And I don't know what your concerns are, Liberty, but maybe you could tell us what the doctor said, I can weather a storm. I'm 71 years old. I've got money in the bank. My wife's got a job I can fall back on, and she'll loan me money at prime plus 2%. So I'm good. But what are your concerns, Liberty?
So, my biggest concern right now is I think the lack of security and the lack of certainty I feel with the market. You know, I have a lot of friends whose father's jobs I've admired for years, and now every other week they're getting fired and rehired. You know, and as a young college student myself, I don't have any prospects of buying a home at the moment. I did 4 years ago, and now the more I grow wiser, the more I think it's far-fetched to assume that I'll be able to do that. But, you know, and what you bring up is a really interesting factor because you say that we're living in a double-sided economy, right? Which means that someone telling the story is hiding or obscuring some type of information or painting a different story that on paper isn't the reality that we're faced with, right? And I had the privilege of listening to one of your other podcasts where you talked a lot about, you know, the creation of debt and how it actually came from insurance companies because they wanted you to foreclosure on your house. And so they were like, no, do this, take my loan. And then they ended up screwing you over for their own benefit. Do you believe that we are trapped in a cycle of debt because of the way that the system markets it to us and the idea that we deserve more than what we have, you know, with the example of unemployment and what the reality of that really means, you know, and how did institutions like insurance companies profit from that mentality that really is, in a way, obscuring our financial security? I hope
Wow,
that makes sense.
that was great. First of all, thank you for doing some research. You dug in to find that show. That was an old one. But yeah, I think, you know, is it nefarious? You know, we could argue that all day long. What I care about is what the effects are on the people who are trying to maintain their standard of living or improve their standard of living. So you brought up buying a home. You know, right now, buying a home is less affordable than it has been in decades. We have mortgage rates hovering around 6.8%, according to Freddie Mac, right? And we have prices through the roof. Now, as you pointed out, the job market is pretty scary. So even if you have a good job right now, particularly if you're employed in anything that has to do with the federal government, you don't have the information you need to make a decision like buying a home. And it's that sort of instability that worries me. That, you know, you're saying, is somebody hiding something from us? And other people are saying, no, everything's right out there in the open. And I'm going to say, yeah, but it changes by the direction of the wind. How do you make a decision based on anything like that? You know, I don't want to talk too much about stats, but we're talking about unemployment, you know, being at 4.2%, inflation, you know, 2.3%. That's not awful, right? That's
No.
cool to pre-pandemic levels, but prices haven't returned to normal. So, what kind of wackiness is this that we're living in, right? How do people like your generation or anybody really make a decision based on these things? You know, it's really very scary. You mentioned security. And we talk about things like the gross domestic product and unemployment stats, right? Yeah, talking heads sound great, right? You get a bunch of economists together, they're all going to sound like they know what they're doing and where the market's moving, and they're happy to tell people who have enough money, like the senator, right, what to do to weather a storm, to ride this out, how to move your money into someplace safer for the time being, or how to take more risks if you feel like you can tolerate that. But for many, many Americans, they don't have the money to do that. I think there was a stat that said something like, I'm going to make this up, 68% of Americans or something like that can't come up with $1,000 for an emergency expense without putting it on a credit card. You know, we used to talk about people saving for a home like you're talking about, you know, putting 20% down on a home, putting 10% down on a home. Well, when homes are $500,000, you're going to be saving for a while for that. And I think it's terribly unfair that we are in this position, but it didn't happen overnight. And to answer your question about do I think we're, you asked me a number of questions, so I'm trying to remember them all, but do I think that we're in this position of being in debt? I think what you were headed toward is something about immediate gratification and being sold the idea that we can and should have everything our hearts desire right now, and we can pay for it later. Is that what you were thinking?
Absolutely, because that's the dream that's sold to us, right?
Yeah, well, we bought it, hook, line, and sinker.
Yeah.
And if you did hear that old show, you know that I was talking about the genie is out of the bottle as soon as people realized that we could make payments on things instead of saving up to buy your first house, which cost $5,000. Now, nobody can afford to do that, or very few people can. And so we buy everything on time. And we think as long as we can make the payments, we're okay. But the tiniest thing happens. Your dog goes to the vet and there's a big vet bill. Your car needs a huge repair. Somebody has a medical illness. Somebody loses a job, or is just out of work for a few weeks. I mean, most people really don't have that sort of 6 month buffer that everybody says you're supposed to have in cash reserves. And so that throws you immediately into debt, hovering around 25% for credit cards. So, is it hopeless? No, it's not hopeless. There are things you can do. But like the senator, what I'm about is the education part, right? Yes, I'll tell you how to, get to my website and things like that. But what I really care about is enough people understanding what's really going on for them personally in their own household, and then doing something about that, and what you can do. And so we really are about empowering people and giving them not just advice, and not just apps, but the actual tools they can use to be able to make themselves more financially well, more financially fit. I think we've lost the senator's audio, unfortunately.
Oh, okay. No, I'm still here. Can you hear
Okay.
me?
We can hear
Yeah.
you. We can hear you.
Okay. Let me can I put you on hold a second? Yeah, we're having a technical issue on our end. But
Yeah, sure.
anyway,
Welcome.
let me just say that and just to build on what you're saying, because I was raised this way. My family bought everything on time. We bought TVs for $10 a week, and we never owned a house. We never owned a car. We were in the kind of crisis that you talk about, doctor, every time we had any little blip. And so that's another thing you have to realize, that in the end, you end up paying a lot more for this stuff. These people, I mean, I'm sure we bought a TV, $300 TV, and paid $900 for it by the time we were done paying for it. So that's another thing. But and I just wanted to point that out. I'd also like to say to any of my extended family that might be listening, I was really kidding about having a lot of money. I'm really kind of broke. But that's my little joke, because they're always trying to borrow money. But anyway, given what the Liberty said, what about Donald Trump's big bill, which they now say is going to add $4 trillion to national debt over the next decade? Given what Liberty just asked you, what kind of effect is adding $4 trillion to the debt going to have on people like her, on young people that are going to be looking to borrow money, that are going to be looking to move ahead in life? What do you think the $4 trillion additional debt is going to do to the economy? Do you have any sense of that? And to investment?
Well, so I try not to be political, although it's almost impossible these days to avoid
Yeah.
that because everything has some sort of political edge to it. But, household debt right now is at a record high. We're at 18, 18.2, I think it is, trillion dollars in household debt. And we're going to add $4 trillion to the debt. It's to me, it's staggering that we continue to add debt. I mean, what I do for a living, right, is show people how to manage their debt, their budget, their retirement, so that it doesn't eat them up, right? We show people how to take that kind of debt and muscle it down to less than 3% and pay it off in less than 9 years on average, including mortgages and all of that. So for me, when I look at a town, like I've worked with mayors about, fixing the financial status of their town. And so when I look at something like the economy at this super huge scale, when I zoom out and I see the amount of debt that we have now that we continue to get, and I see that we are beholden to other countries who are holding our notes, I worry a lot, actually, that we are in a very precarious situation. And to your point, it's one thing for all us old people to say, oh, it doesn't affect us much, or we don't like that. But our children and our children's children are inheriting this. And if you think the student loan burden on them is a lot, wait till you see what this is going to do.
Yeah.
Because it's spiraling out of control. I mean, financially, we are hurtling towards Acropolis, okay? We can't continue to do that without fixing something. And it just befuddles me that of all the energy we put into these things politically and all the bills that are put forth, that more effort, maybe it is happening and I don't see it, but it seems to me that more effort should go toward making us feel and be financially stable, not just looking at some macroeconomic indicators that say, oh, look, wages grew 3.2%. We're in good shape. You have to look at that and say, yeah, okay, wages grew 3.2%. Inflation for the same period was at 2.4%. It's easy to look at that and say, oh, well, people are in good shape because they made more money than inflation. But then start looking at the debt. Because credit card debt went up by 5.8%, right, in that same period of time. So I totally agree with you that the debt is a problem. What Donald Trump is thinking about this, I don't know. I mean, I can't tell. Everything he says seems to change on a daily basis. And so I do have a hard time with that. I don't really care what political persuasion somebody is. But I said it to you, I think, earlier. When you start to harm Americans, you've lost my vote. You
Yeah,
can't
and
keep doing this
I
to
mean,
people.
and that's the problem for me too. It's really not so much what Donald Trump, can his policy per se, but I'm glad to see that there are people in Congress standing up against this because of the debt.
We need
And
more.
I just and I, what I really wanted to get at, Doctor, with my question is, so what do you tell somebody like Liberty, who's 21 years old? What do you tell her? In terms of, I know what my investments are, my portfolio is, and as long as they don't take my Social Security away or inflation doesn't get out of hand, I have no problems. But my financial future is set. It's been set over 30 years of my investing. But what do you tell a young person that hasn't invested yet? What kind of advice do we give them?
Yeah, well, first of all, I think you've touched on a very important point. It seems to me that people in my field, financial advisors, registered investment advisors, people who call themselves financial planners, they certainly have a place. And what they do mostly, and I know because I've been one since I was 23, right? Our place has been traditionally to talk to people about how much money they should be growing. And that's what puts out the fire. Don't worry about how much you're paying on your credit cards. Don't worry about not being able to buy a house yet. If you just save and you save early enough and you save off the top, and every mantra you'll hear, right? If you just put the money away, you'll be okay at retirement, down the road, whatever. What we do at Hug Your Money is tip that completely upside down and say, but wait, if you don't manage your debt, which is going to eat you alive. Now, we're not just talking about credit cards, we're talking about mortgages and student loans and car payments and debt you owe to the IRS and your mother and your brother-in-law, right? All of that has to be paid. All of those payments are eating up your income, your take-home pay. right? If you can find a way, like what we do, to reduce that, to crunch that way down so that you're paying less than 3% on that debt overall without harming your credit, right? Very important. If you can find a way to do that, I promise you, it will change how much you need to retire or live a good life, because you're not sending that money out to creditors. And if you can do that early enough, like at Liberty's age, if we can start teaching, okay, this is how you manage debt, not just don't get debt, telling people just don't do anything unless you can buy it in cash. That worked 30 years ago, 50 years ago, 100 years ago. It isn't happening now. Who's buying a house in cash these days? Okay. So it has to be that they get a set of tools that are practical, that are private, that don't come with a bunch of lectures or shame, right? It has to be empowering tools that allow them to manage this money in a way that lets them shift from, gee, I only have $500 in savings and my car now needs a repair. What am I going to do? To, okay, I've built cash reserves. Okay, I have a budget. Okay, I'm putting money away for my house down payment or whatever it is. It certainly can be done, but it does come with some costs. Are you going to buy the $100 pair of sneakers and the lattes, or are you going to, put some money away? Lecturing people won't do it. They have to be inspired. They have to be motivated. They have to be supported. And they have to get this positive reinforcement all the time. It's so easy to do. This kills me. It's so easy to do with the right tools. People want to be able to manage their money better, but they don't want to be stressed out about it every day. And they certainly don't want lectures, right? That's not useful. So when you provide these kinds of tools very early on, they can do it. Now, I'll give you an example. People talk about a budget. Liberty, you're just spending too much money on those lattes. What you need to do is get a budget. I mean, how many times have you heard this, right?
So many.
Well, thank you for
I say it
playing.
all the time,
It's
Pam.
not going to work. Budgets work when you have two things. You either have a realistic way to make your budget and it becomes flexible and you can continue to use it over your lifetime and just keep tweaking it as you go on. Or when you have so much money, you don't care, in which case you probably didn't need to make the budget in the first place. You just spend money when it comes in and nobody cares. Okay. People make budgets at kitchen tables when they're stressed, when they can't pay their rent. Okay. That's when they make budgets. Budgeting is like a roadmap, okay, with GPS. It's useful, but it isn't enough on its own. All budgeting is going to do is tell you whether you have enough money coming in to meet your bills. I want more for you than that. I don't want you spending your life paying bills. I mean, I want you to be able to manage what you're paying and save for the future while you're doing this, lifestyle thing that everybody should be allowed to do. So, I don't want to go off on a rant about this, but that's why we built the tools we built. You know that Hug Your Money is patented, right? It's simpler for me to just say it's patented than to tell you all the things it's not like. It's not like this and it's not like that. It's patented for a reason. One of the reasons is that it's a tool to manage your debt, not just get you out of debt, but so when you need to buy a car, you just plug it into the system and it tells you before you ever make the decision if you want. How that's going to affect you. When will it be paid off? Will it take the 60 months or 72 months, or will it be paid off in 24 months? How much will you pay in interest? How much will you save if you use our system versus a standard loan? When you have that kind of data, lightning fast in front of you, you are able to make thoughtful, prudent, wise decisions in the privacy of your own little client portal, right? That your employer isn't looking at, your parents aren't looking at, your brother's not looking at. It's you and your coach, whether it's an AI coach or a real coach, whatever, it's you making these decisions, but you are empowered with the actual tools to do it.
Well, before I let Liberty ask a follow-up question, let me just say I think I touch on something that you said. It really doesn't. I learned a long time ago that more important than how much money you have is the way you live. You know, that really what's important is the way you live. And I think that I was lucky in running my own business for 25 years because I was forced to do everything you just said, doctor. You know, at the end of the month, I stood in between a client and 20 subcontractors. So at the end of the month, I had to pay my subcontractors. You know, I had to have the, that was the first thing that I took care of every month, was making sure I had enough money to make it to the next month. And above my desk was a saying from a very famous Chicago, University of Chicago economist that said, "In the long run, we are all dead." And that's the mantra of small business, right? You're never, that's the difference between me and Walmart, is that Walmart can plan for 5 years out there. I'm always worried about making payroll next week and, you know, doing the next thing and doing the next thing. So I think I was lucky in that regard and learned how to save and took advantage when I was in business for myself of putting 20% of my salary away every year in a 401k. But go ahead, Liberty.
Liberty, did you just hear him say, "I walked uphill both ways to school in the snow"? I
Yeah,
did.
I'm a politician.
So, can I just
That's
admit that?
exactly. And you know what? I did it when I left the log cabin in the morning after writing my lessons on the back of a shovel. So, yeah,
But
my
here's the
wife has been
thing.
saying that for years. Your dad walked in bare feet up, you know, uphill both ways to school every morning.
Well, I want to help young people. So
Go
I'm going
ahead.
to say that although you and I can both sit here and say this is how we did it, it's almost irrelevant. We did it in a different time. And
Yeah, that's
even if
true.
we did it in the same time, younger people will not hear that the same way. Would you? Right? If I said to you, you're going to get up every morning and use Chat GPT and this is how you're going to do things, you'd look at me and say, what are you? That's a different world. That's what we're dealing with now.
Yeah,
Economically.
my first mortgage, the first place I ever bought, my mortgage was 13%. And when I sold it, my real estate agent said, "What did you put this on your Visa? How did you get a 13% mortgage?" But you know, I was so desperate to own, and I didn't know what I was doing. And mortgage rates were high in those days. But you know, yeah, you're right, Liberty. I'm sorry.
Liberty, I'd love to hear your take on this. Go ahead.
Yeah, so I think what you guys are talking about is really interesting because it seems like, I've been budgeting, I've been trying to save. And now I'm like, okay, well, how are we going to manage the crisis of debt when I'm faced with it? You know what I mean? How am I going to head that on? And I think that's an issue that me and a lot of my peers are facing. I know that I'll go to the library these last 2 weeks to go apply for jobs, and I'll ask the students around me, who here is working and who here is also applying for jobs? Everyone is jobless. There's not one person who's employed. How are we supposed to even save money, which is the first step to healing our future debt, if we can't even have a job, right? And on top of that, we have someone who is making the financial decisions, instilling a lot more fear than hope. And you coming from Hug Your Money, that fully focuses on helping people heal their debt, you keep repeating the words of empowerment, right? This man is not empowering us. No jobs are available. We are paralyzed by fear, a lot of us. We don't know what direction to walk in. And it's hard not to panic when we're seeing the market tank. Now I'm finally understanding economics, and it's like, oh wait, you can't buy a job. Everything you learned is actually out of date. Surprise. Your mentors have a completely different experience than you do. So how, with all of this fear, it's really hard not to panic. How can you coach these people to manage the fear and to make clear-headed, confident decisions? You know, what's the step to creating that empowerment? Because I'm feeling really out of hope right now.
Yeah, I can hear that. My heart goes out to you. It really does. First of all, let me just say you're very articulate and I'm really enjoying our conversation.
Oh,
And
thank you.
I have every faith in you. But I think that you bring up an enormously important point, and it has to do with emotions. Right? Money and emotions are intrinsically tied, and I wish they weren't, because almost every bad decision anybody's ever made about money came from something emotional. So you mentioned panic, you mentioned fear, you mentioned hopelessness, right? This is doom and gloom, okay? And I can understand why you would feel that way. I feel that way for people right now, right? Not just young people. I mean, we've got relatives that are, hanging fire on their jobs. They get up every day, they don't know if they're going to have a job. So what I think may happen here, first of all, let me just say, let's go to the fear and panic part first. Forget that it's money for a moment. If you were go so this is what fogs people's vision. They say, oh, it's money, it's math. They get nervous, they don't want to talk about it. Forget that it's money. Take anything else that you would be afraid of. Okay. I'll give you a personal example. I'm a singer. Took me a long time, of getting up there and faking it till I made it, until I felt really comfortable with it, right? But believe me, I had to keep doing it. So how do you get over a fear? You keep doing it. The more you do it, the easier it gets. Now you're employing this already in your budgeting, right? You may not have a job, you may not have the money to start saving, but you have the tools to budget and you're starting to budget. I want to go back to that for a minute and ask you how you're doing it. But anyway, that's the first time you sat down to make a budget, you were probably afraid to do it, right? But when you do it over and over again, now it's just like, your old friend, like, oh, I gotta do that stupid budget thing again. But you don't freak out about it, right? So it's the same thing with money. But what I wanted to say is, we've been working closely with a tech school, and I've been doing the research, and I see this shift from people applying to colleges to people applying to tech schools. Not that it's an either-or situation, but there are a lot of people applying to tech schools because they don't want the student debt, right? So the only reason I'm talking about that is because I think that your generation may well have to reinvent themselves here to survive, right? So instead of looking for and I know this is really tough and it's really out there on a limb, and some of you will be able to do it and some of you won't, but you're doing it right now. You're co-hosting a podcast, right? So not everybody is cut out to start a small business. But in fact, some of you will. And rather than, and it might be out of necessity, you simply can't find a job anywhere and you need money. So you come up with an idea. I remember I'm near UMass, and I remember the two people that started Life is Good t-shirts, right? The Life is Good. They just went around campus selling these t-shirts. Look at it now, okay? That's a local story. Senator was talking about, right? This is what I did. I started this business. I started my business out of necessity, right? I was working in the financial industry. I got a terrible car accident. I was out of work and they wanted me to go back, and I just physically wasn't feeling up to doing it. And so I started a business. Now, you're going to fail sometimes. It's going to happen. But if you let fear paralyze you, they won. They won the game. You can't do it. You're too bright. And you have too much ahead of you to let that happen. I will tell you this, I don't have all the answers for you. I wish I had all the answers for you, but I will support you in whatever you decide to do. If you said, well, I want to, like a paper trading, investing trading, you can do it in paper. I want to build a paper debt account. I want to build a budget that isn't, it's not real dollars. I just want to sign up. I want to go in and put these things in there and learn how to manage this stuff when I get it. I'd be happy to help you with that. You can save for retirement and show it, build that scenario right there in our system. It doesn't have to be real dollars at all, right? But you could start to learn what you can and can't afford and why. Learn about your debt to income ratio. Learn about getting your credit to the place you want it to be. Learn about things that are creative ways to buy a home. One of the biggest goals that people your age have is to buy that first home. But what I see often is they want the dream home. And who doesn't? I mean, we all want the dream home the first time, right? But you're faced with an environment that it might behoove you to maybe buy a duplex and get the rent to pay for your mortgage. And that's home one, right? And you do it step A, step B. You say, okay, I'm going to buy this home. I don't love it, but it's in a decent neighborhood and I can get the rent to pay my mortgage. And I'm going to build some equity and I'm going to give myself 5 years. And in 5 years, I'm going to have pocketed that money, stashed that money for a down payment, and I'm going to either decide whether to keep this house and make money from the rental income, or I'm going to sell this house and use that money to buy my first dream home, right? There are things like options that you can buy, you can use to buy houses, lease with an option to buy. And there's about as many solutions as there are problems, and then some, right? So I really do. I think one of the dangers in what you said is that if you surround yourself with like-minded people who are all complaining about not having jobs, all complaining about how are we ever going to get anywhere, I think you might be going down the wrong path. Find yourself some people who are being successful, even if it's minorly successful, or who you feel good around when you talk about money, and do more of that. Form a little club with your friends that say, we're gonna, I'm good at budgeting and you're good at saving. Let's get four more people who are good at other things, and let's meet once a week, and we'll have a money club. Talk about stuff. But make yourself some ground rules that are like, okay, we're going to help lift each other up when we don't have a job, when we're getting beat down. This is what our job is to lift ourselves up and find another way to do it. I know that what I'm saying may be falling on deaf ears, and it sounds a little trite, like just go swing the bat again, but it will happen. You will end up with a job, a career, a business. You will.
Yeah, and I see this adjustment going on with my own children who are a little older than Liberty. My daughter has a 401k. My daughter has a retirement account, and she just turned 32. We never thought about stuff like this. No, nobody, when I first started out in the world after college, thought about saving for retirement. Nobody. Now we see young people thinking about things like that, and so I think I don't think your advice is necessarily falling on deaf ears. And the environment's changing, and I think that we're seeing people make those adjustments. And you're right, Liberty will do just fine. But let me ask you about the stock market. That's something you really know about. As the stock market goes up, does that cause inflationary pressure? Do we, as the stock market gets better, is there a correlation between that and inflation?
Yes and no. I mean, what I really think is that they are disjointed. That people, here's what I think. I think people spend a lot of time focusing on how well the market does as a marker of success, when what we should be focusing on is how much breathing room do people have financially? Okay. For super wealthy people, we talk about the stock market and how successful it is and how you're going to play it. But for the general average public, it doesn't matter how well the stock market is doing or what happens, within your 401k until you go to take the money out, right? A lot of people's 401ks are still 201ks at the moment, right? Until you take that money out, it doesn't matter. They don't even open their statements, right? But inflation matters. If you don't have enough money at the end of the month to pay your bills, that matters, right? If your coffee is now costing you $8, or your dozen eggs is costing you however much, right? Maybe the simplest way to talk about this, to frame that separation that I see between what happens, the trajectory of the stock market, and what's happening with inflation or how it feels to the public, is something called the Consumer Sentiment Index that Michigan University publishes. And this is not the only index, right? There's the Federal Reserve publishes an index like a report like this. Gallups publishes a report like this. They're all meant to, and just go out on the internet and look for these things. They're all meant to talk about how it feels to you economically, not what the stock market is doing. Because those things like the gross domestic product and unemployment stats don't consider that stuff, right? They miss things. They're not about household security. That word that Liberty used before, security, right? They're not about household security. They miss things like debt. They miss things like burnout. They miss things like budget gaps. So So if you're going to be a true economist, as I know you have a background, right, and you're just going to look at what the numbers are in the market, and assume that if the stock market's on fire, that solves all your problems, you're doing great. I think you're going to be disappointed because it's going to take a while before you feel good about that. I mean, we have inflationary pressure, for years now that we can't just make up for with a 3.2% wage increase. We're nowhere near that. We're going to have to, by this lag we're talking about, right? You're going to have to dig your way out slowly. Not to get too far off the track, but things that worry me, especially for the younger generations, are, the idea of the student loan debt and what will happen to that, whether that's just going to be like, great, now you owe it, and too bad, so sad about any forgiveness programs we talked about. We're just not going to honor that, or we're not going to do that. What it will cost to get an education going forward. I'm trying to give Liberty some inspirational stuff, but the fact of the matter is, the best thing I can do is tell you the truth and tell you folks are in trouble right now, but you are not the first ones, right? I mean, people lived through the Depression and wars and other things, and they came through it, but they had to reinvent themselves. They had to, sometimes people lived, 15 people in a household because that's how they afforded to get by. They're hard times call for desperate measures. And you're very bright. I'm sure that you will find some path, and it will probably be the moment you shine far better than you might just getting a typical job. Nothing against getting a job, right? Getting a job is great, but I think something bigger will happen for you. And I'm not trying to, blow smoke at you. I think we're getting a squeeze right now. And it's not just the younger generation. When I think about housing, we're talking about mortgages at 6.8%. And she's saying, well, I might not be able to buy a house. Rent is up 20 to 30% from pre-pandemic levels. Rent. Okay. I mean, I just helped a friend find an apartment, and it was tough in our area to find anything under $2,000 a month. Well, Senator, you and I both know that was a pretty decent mortgage back in the day.
Well,
Not
and that's the thing
the
that you know,
case.
when you say these things, doctor, they resonate, I'm sure, different with Liberty than they resonate with me, because I used to pump gas for 28 cents a gallon, and and I made $1.35 an hour, and I had money in my pocket because cigarettes were 35 cents a pack, and McDonald's was 99 cents for a hamburger, French fries, and a Coke, and so these really resonate with me. I've seen how much it amazes me what my children pay for things. And they laugh at me, actually, because I'm still stuck in that. I'll say, what? That costs you spend how much on that? Oh my God, I've never spent more than $25 for a tie. What are you talking about? So they really resonate with me, but I'm not sure it's the same with you. What do you think, Liberty?
Well, first, Dr. Rahim, I have to thank you deeply from the bottom of my heart because I think your words are really powerful. I think me and maybe some of the viewers can relate that truly the hardest part of getting back into things, right, is the fear and is the stress. And truly, to have someone like you who is so educated in the field and who, spends her life helping people break out of the debt, to know that things are going to be okay in the end and that this is honestly just a glimpse of something that reoccurs in history many, many times. And that if anything, it's an interesting opportunity to tap into our, curiosity, which is something so brilliant that me and Senator Brown were even talking about this week that I feel is something really powerful from what you talked about. Thank you very much for your words. And I'm sure there are some viewers out there who are feeling the same exact way.
You're welcome.
And I have to say, I'm so curious to know about your guys's financial crisis at your age, when you were my age. You know what I mean? So
Really?
how is that different from what we're seeing today? You know, maybe how did social media magnetize that, or if that had any effect, how is today's financial crisis different from, let's say, a financial crisis you had in your early 20s, early 30s?
Well, hang on to your hat. Wow. Okay. First of all, let me say that you're not alone. That consumer sentiment index I was talking about is at a record high. Well, I take it back. It's the second lowest. The second. It's when I say high, what I mean is it's terrible, right? It's the second worst in 75 years. It's at 50.8%. What that tells me is that Americans are miserable about money. Their sentiment, regardless of what the numbers are in the market, tells us, that index tells us, they feel the worst they have in 75 years, the second worst, which means they feel worse than in most recessions. Right
Wow.
now, Americans feel worse about their money than during most recessions. So I told you I'd tell you. Okay, very briefly, my major financial crisis. Besides, coming from no money and always having to kind of figure out how to, pay for anything. I remember I bought a broom. I'm going to go uphill twice now, too. I bought a broom for my first apartment, which had wall-to-wall carpeting, and I swept my carpet because I couldn't afford a vacuum. True story. I've never told that one on the air. But it's in my book, Retire Debt and Retire Well, that I was about 23, I think, and I had to file a bankruptcy. Because I married a man who did some pretty awful things with the credit I'd given him, and he filed, and then it all fell on me. So I had to file a bankruptcy. I had no job. Okay, I had no job, and I had to file a bankruptcy and try to figure out, and I spent 6 months trying not to file it. And so I had to figure out how I was going to get through it. And the truth is, I did something I never pictured myself doing. I took a job with an insurance company. Now, I thought I had like the pocket protector, dorkiest person in mind you can imagine, right? And I was like, there's no way. I didn't know the difference between comprehensive and major medical. But they were all after me because I took this LIMRA exam and got great scores. And so I interviewed with every one of them, all the big companies. And this one manager was about education, he was a retired school principal. And he just lit me up. He was like, we're going to pay for you to go to school. We're going to do, this is how it's going to work. And I said, what do I have to do? And he said, you got to get a license. And I said, how long? And he said, 40 hours. I said, book it next week. He said, nobody's ever taken this. And I just booked the test. I'll take the test. So I went into a career that I had no interest in, no idea that I would ever, I mean, I had no idea that it was going to pan out. But the money seemed good and it seemed interesting at least. And I ended up here, being a lifer in finance. So, it's like that rule of improvisation. You say yes and, right? Yes and. So yeah, I think that was my major financial crisis and how I got through it. Boy, I could tell you the stories, living, lying on a little mat in front of the fireplace in the middle of the winter with my father freaked out that I was going to stay in my place, right? With a little fire going, and he would bring me the investor's business daily because I had no television. I mean, you can't make this stuff up. But seriously, this is what I had to do. I had to do it. I didn't want to file a bankruptcy. In fact, my pride got the better of me and I said I would reorganize. So I filed a Chapter 13. And then I went to town, like, how am I going to pay this stuff off? Once I got it into a manageable place, which we don't recommend bankruptcy very often for people, but once we get your debt into a manageable place, now we know, okay, now it's doable on your income that you already have. Now let's hammer it. And I ended up paying that off 34 months ahead of schedule. So,
Wow. Well, I have a few similar stories. I did have a TV, but it didn't have any sound. So you could only watch local sporting events because my friends would come over on Sunday and we'd turn the football game on, and then we'd turn it on the radio so that we could hear what was going on. And we had to
Oh.
have a radio next to the TV. But the thing that I had that you were just talking about, Doc, and that Liberty brought up is I never doubted that I would have a good job and a good career when I got out of college. You know, we all thought if we went through college and we did the 4 years, whether this was true or not, that when we got out, we would get jobs and we'd have a career. And there was, you know, I remember I've been working full time since I was 14 years old. So when I got out of college and I took my first white collar job, I took a $3,000 cut in salary. I couldn't believe it. You know, I was selling men's clothes to get through college and graduate school. And then I got a job working for a law firm and they were going to pay me $3,000 less. First, they offered me an assistantship for graduate school. And when I found out how much that paid, I turned it down. I said, I can't, you know, I'd love to do it. I'm so honored, but I can't afford to live on this. You know, I make more money than that. But the thing that I had that maybe you're lacking or your friends are lacking liberty is I never ever thought that things weren't going to get better for me every day. You know, and I think that's so important, is it not, doctor, to have that confidence, to have so that you can move forward and start your own business. I started my own business because I hated the job I was doing and I left, and somebody called me on the phone and said, "Hey man, from my former employer, the Democratic Committee, we need somebody to do a special project for us. Will you do it?" And I said, "Well, yeah, I don't have a job. Of course I'll do it." So I did it, and that led to another project, which led to another project. And Mrs. Brown used to say that I really didn't have my own business. I had just been looking for a job for 25 years, you know. So, sometimes it comes very accidentally. But the one thing I had that I feared that there may not be enough of today is that I always had hope in the future. I always thought things were going to get better.
I think that there's an overall lack of hope across our country right now, but I want to not dwell on that so much. I do think that optimism pays off with a little realism mixed in, and that's where I think what I think we're talking about. I think that being able to laugh about money like this, even if it's not about your immediate financial situation, helps to alleviate some of that stigma that people have. I want to tell Liberty something that I learned about how to make decisions that panic you or about risk. And this may not be any epiphany for anybody, but it was for me when I figured it out. You know, the way I make those decisions is I figure out what is the worst thing that can happen to me if I make that decision. And if I'm okay with that, then I make that choice. So right now, you know, you don't have a job, you're looking for a job. You're not sure you want to start a business or you want to do something else. Some people move to other countries where cost of living is less. I mean, there's a million solutions, right? But, you know, just look at it and say, well, what's the worst thing that can happen to me? Oh, no, I don't want that. I guess I have to adjust my plan. Or, well, you know, that happens. I'll go live on mom and dad's couch for a couple of months. I'll pull myself up and I'll do it again. Yeah. Just look at what's the worst thing instead of letting that fear paralyze you. Go the other way and say, how bad can it be? Seriously, it could be this bad. I mean, don't take it lightly. Really look at how bad it could be. You know, and the other thing is, you know, you worry about debt and people worry about debt all the time. And I can tell you, having been in that position prior to bankruptcy, boy, it'll eat you alive. The one thing you have to remember is there's no more debtor's prison. That doesn't mean I want you to owe debt and not pay it and ruin your credit, but they aren't going to come and take you to jail. Okay, if you can't pay your credit card or your house or your car payment, the worst thing that will happen to you is they will repossess whatever is attached to it. And in the case of credit cards, if you don't have any money anyway, all they can do is trash your credit and take you to court for a judgment. All of this could be a longer conversation, but don't let it paralyze you from moving forward because you're afraid of debt. Make the decision wisely. You know, can I afford this payment? Am I taking this? I have a whole thing in the book about good debt versus bad debt, three columns, and how to figure out whether it's a good debt or a bad debt. And the lesson there is that you can shift anything. You know, you think credit card is a bad debt and student loan is a good debt? Not so simple. You can shift one of those into the opposite column just by changing one of the checkboxes, right? And so I go into detail about that. But I just think that this has become so important to me, particularly to help younger people who very often can't afford to, kind of get out of their own way right now, right? It's almost impossible that we've started offering Hug Your Money is now available as an employer benefit or an employee benefit, right? Yeah. So that we do it at scale. Hundreds or thousands of people can come on board at a very affordable rate. The employer can either cover it or charge the employees and reimburse part of it or all of it. But it makes these tools available, to anybody at this very affordable rate. And of course, we're AI'd up and all of that stuff is going on to help us do it. But yeah, I don't
Well,
know.
we're out of time here, Doc, but do
Oh
me
my
a
God.
favor before we leave. Tell people how they can reach out to you, how they can be part of Hug Your Money, how they can get your services.
Sure.
Tell our listeners how they can do that.
Thank you, Senator. Sure. They can reach us by phone at 413-773-3333. But probably the best way is just to go to hugyourmoney.com, click the button that says Get Started Now, put your information in. You'll get an instant customized analysis. You won't get spammed. You won't get sold into some portal. You won't get called. It's all private. And you'll be able to see what those numbers look like for you. And then if you like it, you can move forward.
Well, thanks so much, Dr. Rahim, for being on the show and giving us such great advice. Folks, we will post the information that the doctor just put out there. We'll post it on our website. If you want to go to bbsradio.com, we'll have it up tomorrow, and you can get that information. You should check out what she has to offer because you can never start too early. Liberty Jones, thanks so much, Dr. Rahim. Thanks so much. We play you out with a song. I couldn't think of any other song that would fit the occasion. Here's one from the Beatles. We'll see y'all next week. Thanks.
Standing in the shadows of love.